All right, we're going to spend some time in the legal side of things, the paperwork side of things. I'm not a legal expert, so it's my sort of 101 version. And if you always say, if you've got a question, A, ask me. I might be able to give you a perspective, but if you've got any doubts, then we ask legal people. Yeah, that's what they're there for. All right, so be mindful around all of that. There's space in your book if you want to write some thoughts on this, the top of page 3. So the key legal words are reasonable, proportionate, necessary. Reasonable, this is my definition of reasonable, is would someone else have done something similar in similar circumstances? Alright, so that's really what it means. Would someone else with similar background, knowledge and experiences have done something similar in this circumstance? Proportionate is, depends what level of risk. So what's the hazard presented? A level of risk presented by their behaviour, that means we can respond, and so the higher level of risk, our response can be more significant. Yeah, we don't want to overreact, we don't want to underreact. And necessary, could you have done something else? What other options were there? Did you have to physically intervene? Did you have to use medication? And this is common law, so it's what the police operate under when they do whatever they do. Is it reasonable, proportionate, necessary? If we have to justify our actions around all of that. So the thing I showed you before, just about we didn't practice it as such, because there's not a lot to practice, blocking above the elbow. Do you think that's a legal technique? Do you think that's legal? Depends when we use it. So hopefully none of you went out and started blocking people above the elbow randomly. Otherwise, we'll all be in trouble. All right. Depends on the circumstances. Yeah. The case. There are hardly anything that is either legal or illegal. Depends when we use it. Yeah. All right. So, as a colleague of mine said, apologies if you really like the book. Dreadful book. Great title. 50 Shades of Grey. It's very grey. All right. Depends on the circumstance of the case. So. We'll finish this bit with the questions we need to ask as opposed to the answers. Because every situation is slightly different. Right? Policies and procedures should cover the vast majority. They should help us in the vast majority of situations, but there may be on occasions where something we have to do slightly different. But they should be rare, if at all. And we'll talk a bit more about that. Duty of care, we'll talk a bit more about that in a minute, means you're operating in exceptional circumstances. It's different, it's unusual. What you do day to day, most of you, I don't know all of your jobs obviously, is unusual to what people who don't have that duty of care can do or would do. Yeah, and again, we can get desensitised to some of what we do if we're not careful. That's there to help us cope with it, but again, that's why you got desensitised to maybe moving into people's intimate space to do whatever you need to do. And your brain's got desensitised to that. But the person that happens to isn't. Yeah, it doesn't make it wrong, it just means they're exceptional circumstances. And it's not illegal if we can't say it's in the patient's best interest, because you have a right to keep yourself safe. But it's a great defence to say I was doing it for them, to keep them safe. So even if you might end up having to, medically, chemically restrain them, sort of thing. Yes, it's for everyone else's safety, but to stop them doing more harm to themselves or others as well, potentially, isn't it? Same with the physical restraint in those pieces. So, dynamic risk assessment. So, just in twos, threes, or fours, yeah, so just stay at your table. A lot of our own interpretation, maybe what dynamic means, we all know what risk assessment means. So, what does a dynamic risk assessment mean to you? Have a conversation with someone near to you. What does dynamic risk assessment mean to you? So, thoughts. What emerged in your conversations? How would you, there's not a single definition as such, but how would you define a dynamic risk assessment? Or how might you?
Constant changing.
Yeah, so dynamic is constantly changing, yeah? Any other bits to add into?
Flexible or adaptive.
Yeah. Alright, so in a lot of your environments are very dynamic. Some environments are very dynamic, some are partly dynamic, some are less dynamic, aren't they? That's the nature of it. But it's what I would say, what good staff have always done, stop and think before I act. Right, it's using this language to help keep us safe for doing what is, a difficult job on occasion. Alright, so it's not protecting people doing things they shouldn't do, but actually I did a dynamic risk assessment and felt that was the safest option. because you can do something and things can go wrong. And it's not a get out of jail card, it doesn't mean we can just stick that in front of anything and then that's okay. So, but it demonstrates it uses the language people expect. You know, I always say the more removed people are, and they often are if they're doing investigations or anything else, from the floor, the less they can understand the working realities if we're not careful, isn't it? So how do we protect people doing their best in difficult circumstances? So using that language of dynamic risk assessment. Yeah, and but we'll talk about incident records in a minute too. But using that language that demonstrates I stopped and thought before I acted, it might be 2 seconds of stopping and thinking, it might be on occasion. Yeah, so I didn't just do something, I stopped and thought, I think this is the same. Which do I think has got less risk? May or may not have, it's our best attempt in that moment. As I say, if we can, great to say it's around the best interests of that patient, but not the end of the world if we can't. But a great thing to be thinking about, as I've said before, yeah, what would I want somebody else to do if this was my loved one? So it sounds obvious in a training room, but in the moment when they're saying or doing things that are really not very pleasant, we might forget that. It'll just give us a considered response. We're more likely to be able to do those things better. Other bits to be aware of, and this is my version of Workplace Health and Safety 101, all right? So it's very short. And just trying to get to, I'll try and make things as simple as possible, but without losing the key messages. So it certainly doesn't count us training in, but gives you a sense of it. So there's two elements to it, the employee's responsibilities and employer's responsibilities. So employee's responsibilities for me, in our daily practices, we're expected to risk assess and reduce. What can I do in my environment, and what I do in my practices, etc., my interactions, assess the risk and reduce it. Right? So I do as much as I can do. Then my responsibility as an employee is to inform the relevant person if I'm still concerned about the level of risk. So who would you inform? I don't need to know, but how do you go about, if you're concerned about a risk, who do you inform?
The team leaders, managers.
You might put it on risk man. I don't need to know, but as long as you know, all right, that's the key bit. So we need to make sure if we're concerned about a risk, we've done what we can, that we don't want the person above us, and usually there is a person above us, to say, oh, I didn't know about that. So we put it in writing. You know, risk man obviously is in writing, but even that, the risk is a quick verbal conversation and there's no record of it. And these are lessons learned when people thought, but I told them. They've forgotten it, or they, you know, not many people are going to say, yes, it was my fault. With their career gone and everything else. And horrible thought, but this has happened to some people. So I'm trying to make sure it doesn't happen to you in that. So put in an email, brief email. Yeah, it might be very nice people, your team lead and everything else. But in the moment, if something hits the fan, then people quite right, understandably protect themselves mostly. Yeah, so put it in writing in some way, shape or form. Once you've done that, I would say again, my simple version is there's 3 possible outcomes from that. The one we always want is they've solved the problem, they take away the risk. Yeah, alright, we can fix the car because it was a trip hazard. Alright, that sort of one is relatively easy to fix, we can get someone to do that. Alright, the second one, which is quite common certainly in my world, and I'm guessing it will be in your world at times, is yeah, I can see that's a bit of a problem. I need to collect more evidence, more data around that. What else are we doing? So I need to monitor that for a period of time. Alright, to see, can we shift anything, and again, I'm deliberately using the word evidence and data linked to that. Where's our evidence? Because often we need to make the case to people above them that we might need additional resources for that. And rarely do people go say, yeah, there you go, here's money or time to solve that. Alright, so we need to build the case often at times, and that's again, we'll come back to the paperwork, the importance of paperwork. The third one, which we never want to hear is, sorry, that's just unfortunately the nature of working in this environment. So the example could be, all right, I want to work in a Calvary hospital, but I don't ever want to work with someone who might have dementia or delirium or be under the influence of drugs or alcohol. And we say, well, probably not the right environment. There might be some jobs you can do that in Calvary hospital, but a lot of jobs you're going to mix, interact with people who may have those on occasions. So that doesn't mean you accept the potential violence or aggression you get from people in that. It's situation, but we accept that's more likely to happen. If you don't want to work with people who might have those things, then don't work here, work somewhere else. Yeah. Does that make sense? We're not accepting getting hurt, but we're understanding there's more of a chance. There's probably, and again, you'll know the world better than I do, there's more of a chance of being, of experiencing those behaviours in ED than there maybe is in the maternity ward. It might not be. All right? In my simple world, that is more likely to happen. Doesn't mean it's okay. Absolutely not. But again, if you're not prepared to say, okay, that's more likely to happen here, then don't work there, work somewhere else. All right? We're all different as humans, aren't we? Yes. All right, and we're not all suited to work in all environments. You know, I happen to be suited to work in a special school. That says about me, a special school environment. I wouldn't want to work in a health environment, say it's good or bad. We're just different, aren't we, as humans? And it's working out, yeah. I understood there was more risk in a special school of me getting harmed than there was in a mainstream. Doesn't mean we accept it, but we understand, all right? It's got, oh, it's another example again. It's like being I want to be a firefighter, but I don't want to go near any fires. But what they're given, this comes on to employers, they're then supposedly, hopefully, given, you know, equipment and training in how to minimise that risk, aren't they? And that's what we should be given. So employers are expected to provide a safe working environment, is the language. Does that mean they can guarantee your safety? No. Doesn't mean that. They're expected to take reasonable care to minimise the chance of people getting hurt and provide training and equipment, etc. Can eliminate the risk, call if we can't. How do we minimise it? What do we do if it does happen? Staff are given support. Hence things like this, isn't it? You know, if you know people are going to face people that might be escalated, then, you know, as I said, I didn't get any training in education, so as a principal, you should be given the school, you know, make sure they've got the skills and the knowledge to minimise those, what to do if it does happen. Yeah, so that's my simple version of Workplace Health and Safety 101. But it gives a sense around all of those bits. There's human rights legislation. Yeah, obviously patients have rights, but so do you. So, yeah, you have a right to... No one should go to work. I always say this in all environments, expecting to get hurt. All right, so in certain environments, you know it's an increased chance, unfortunately. Then we're given training and support. Or should be about what we do to manage that. You know, and it is in certain sections, you know, child protection is one I certainly know people have talked about. I don't know this for a fact, my wife talks about AMBOs. I often think there's only a time, you know, they can only really work in those environments for a short period of time. And obviously, sometimes that's actually because we're, you know, the people burn out potentially. They think, oh, we should put better supports in place. Yeah, and it's tricky. Yeah, some of those aren't. Higher risk environments, aren't they? They're exposed to things that are more challenging. Duty of care, we'll talk about another slide as well. Yeah, we have a duty of care, which then again potentially links, hopefully not for any of us here, around negligence, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. Whatever we do should hopefully de-escalate, reduce risk. So they're the two most important things in any crisis situation. How do I make this safer? How do I de-escalate? Yeah, and then when we're all a bit calmer, then we can potentially have a conversation about what they said and what they did, etc. But the risk is we try and solve it then when people are in crisis. Yeah, it's not a learning moment. It's not the time to probably build a relationship. We're all in crisis as part of that. Knowing the appropriate number. Yeah, what's our appropriate number that we need so we're supported? Now, that talks about restraint, but in any intervention, and you'll certainly have that around your clinical interventions, and this is also thinking about behaviour. So you might well call the security or the police. If we know the person, sometimes it's good for them to see that uniform. Okay, I'm going to calm down. Other times it's not. They'll ramp up. I'm not saying don't call them, but maybe don't. You know, we don't want the person to see them because that's going to dramatically escalate it. So we know they're there if we really need them. Yeah, and knowledge of individuals helps with that, doesn't it? Because people respond differently. We don't always have that, so we do our best in those situations. There's proportionate. Yeah, the more serious the danger, the greater degree of force to avoid such danger. This is, you know, could you do anything else? Our best option is try and get into that social space, get out of the way. Yeah, and these are all, you know, they're... Listen always, because sometimes we need to, for whatever reason, to keep them safe, to keep others safe, we need to move in. But why did you not move away? Might well be a question. Doesn't mean you're wrong if you didn't, but we have to justify why did I move in? Because you think moving into someone who is escalated, you've got to go in the circle of danger. Yeah, and the more less we do that, the better for all of us. Because even when you know, you've been training, there's a chance you're going to get hurt moving into that space in some way, shape or form. Then today, what is reasonable? We need to justify. And our best approach is to have conversation scenarios with each other. What is reasonable in this particular situation? So it's not just down to me making that decision. So again, there's a space in your workbook if you'd like to jot something down. Duty of care. So this is a definition. Duty imposed by law to take reasonable care to minimise the risk of harm to others. Yep, so reasonable. So you do your best, we do our best. What would someone else with a similar knowledge, experience, be expected to do to minimise? Yeah, we can't guarantee. You know, Calvary Hospital can't guarantee your safety, and we can't guarantee the safety of patients, or guarantee we're going to solve whatever their issues are. Or rarely. You know, maybe do better than I do, but I'm guessing that we do our best, we're expected to do our best, which sounds obvious. The thing that potentially linked to that, hopefully none of you ever have, will, is negligence, which has three main elements. Alright, so established duty of care, breach of that duty, any ensuing damage or injury related to that breach. Now, if I was having to defend myself against negligence, my personal preference is I'd want it to be around injury, personal risk. Because the concern, slight concern I have around damage is at what point do we do it? I know it's the machine that goes, been deliberately facetious here, but the machine that goes bing that's worth $500,000, they can't damage that. I'm not saying you do or don't do that. It's only, you know, at what point do we say we have to do something because it's damage? Whereas if it's harm to them, to me, to others, for me it's a bit clearer for me to know, okay, this is about personal safety, you know, human safety as opposed to damage. But again, you need to talk these through in your environments, think through what happens if they suddenly, you know, target one of the really expensive pieces of equipment that you have around, what do you do in that? To take no action, whether the outcome is the patient injures themselves or another, including staff, could be seen as negligence. That doesn't mean you're expected to put yourself at risk. You're expected to do something. Call security, call the police, call other people, do something. Yeah? And I hope this doesn't happen, but it won't be unsurprising because I've certainly seen it happen in schools at times. Oh, I'm on my break, not my problem. Alright, it is, because we're all part of the organisation. It doesn't mean we have to go and solve it. Because you might not know the situation, the people. Can I help you? What can I do to help? Yeah, well, if you're not sure, if you don't want to do that, call someone to come and do that. It sounds obvious, doesn't it? But unfortunately, people, you know, tired, oh, just got, you know, had enough. That potentially could. All right? So if it's happening to anywhere in our environment, it is part of our responsibility to do something. But it doesn't mean I have to go in, put myself at risk, or I have to solve it, but I have to do something. In your policies and procedures, there's a definition around containment. All right, so we haven't done any of these today that are around containment. So there's physical containment that can obviously be implemented. There's mechanical, pharmacological, and environmental. You know, if you don't know, I'm sure you do, but if you don't know, you'll know in terms of your scope of practice what you can implement and what others need to implement and who needs to get there. And if you don't know, ask, find other people, not me, because I don't have that deep knowledge. But jot it down, think, okay, I need to check who can implement these things. As I said, unfortunately, you know, people often think, oh, tell me what I can do, tell me what I can't do. And unfortunately, it's not as simple as that. So it is those questions. As I say, that doesn't mean it's illegal if we can't do it from that perspective, but it's a great perspective to come from. Yeah, because that's thinking about them. But ultimately, why was it necessary? How was it reasonable? And how was it proportionate? All right, into your learning groups, thoughts, reflections from this legal side of things before we dive into the paperwork side of things. Look at good enough paperwork now. So before we watch a short incident, why might we put up there good or good enough rather than perfect paperwork?
Because you can never recall everything that's
perfect. Yeah, no such thing as perfect at the end of the day. What's the other risk of perfect?
You want the approval.
It gets longer and longer, doesn't it, if not careful. And we'll talk about some of the issues around that. So what you're going to do on this, for this, just right here, right now, the policy is you've got to write as much detail as what happened and why. But before you write, so we're just going to watch this, all right? So you have to imagine you're watching this incident play out. Then I'm going to give you 60 seconds. There's a blank page at the back of your workbook, folks, for you to write as much detail as what happened and why. All right, so the blank page right at the back. Don't write until it's finished, only got a couple of minutes. As an incident happens, it's nothing too extreme, all right? I don't want people highly anxious during this next 2 minutes. But an incident happens, I'll give you 60 seconds to write down as much detail as what happened and why, and then you're going to go into your learning groups and share what you wrote down and what emerged for you. So, first question is, did you all write down exactly the same things?
No.
Some of you might be some crossover, you know, but we, you know, that was a short clip just from one perspective because it was from a camera. Yeah, I'm guessing people observed or noticed different things. Who noticed, just out of interest, who noticed the person before he went and did what he did, the person on the phone? A few did, but most people don't. Yeah, it could be, again, naturally, for a variety of reasons, I think we focus on the kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in the forefront, but, you know, again, some of it is potentially because they're a small kid. Oh, that's why I say nothing really bad's going to happen to him, because people, you say, oh, I thought the kid was going to be snapped. Well, no, I don't. Nothing really horrendous, that's why I don't want people to be on edge all the time. So, yeah, look, we observe different things. Human beings are the most unreliable eyewitnesses. Our brain focuses in on certain things and then fills in the gaps about other stuff. All right, so be mindful. So this, I'm not suggesting this is a good policy. As much detail as possible what happened and why. Our German said that's not a good policy. All right, because our brain, we fill in information, right? Because we want to appear competent. So we end up, you know, and generally we end up without knowing it, making things up. So our brain has just made sense of it for us and from our perspective. Right, so given we've said that, what happened we saw, but why do you think it happened then?
You're
irritating. Yeah, so look, we start using language like irritating music or horrible music, so we start calling it subjective.
It's just the noise level, I think, was it quite atmosphere?
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a noise.
Yeah. Oh, look. And again, look, we've no idea, have we? Again, was that justified or not? Generally, you think, no. Even what I'm about to say, I'm not saying it's justified. But someone might say, why didn't he move away, the person on the phone?
Yeah.
But it could have been, I don't know, could have been, I was here first, why the hell should I move? You know, these things that play out in our brains at times. Someone said, it could have been, he's just got some news of bloke playing the accordion, having an affair with your wife. We don't know. Again, I'm not saying that justifies it, but a bit more understandable. If that's what he's just heard, etc. All right, our brains are designed to make judgments and make assumptions. So we want to try, when we're writing incidents, to take those out of the way. Use subjective language. All right, what we don't want to use subjective, we want to use objective language. You know, so if we don't remember, say I don't remember. The risk is someone asks us a question, we think, I should remember that. I want to appear competent. So we'll come up with a good story, a version around that. That's, you know, not saying we consciously do that, sometimes it's subconsciously. Your brain only picks up a bit of information, yeah, and then it fills in the gaps, you know, it fills in the gaps to make sense for you from your perspective. Yeah, so but it is important we complete the paperwork. All right, someone said yesterday, and I'm absolutely right, and you know, and this isn't a reason to do it, all right. If it's not documented, it didn't happen. It's definitely not a good reason not to do it. But in caring professions, and carry on from what people said, I'm, you know, presuming exactly the same, incidents are vastly underreported. So what, there could be a variety of reasons for that. What do you think are some of the reasons it might be that generally caring professions underreport?
Too much time.
Takes too much time. Yeah, you're
shifting, you're ready to go home.
Yeah, and we'll talk about timing as a key bit to that. But again, if you know you've had a really, excuse my language, crappy day, and now I've got to fill in loads of paperwork about all the incidents that have happened. What else might be? Yeah, just to accept it, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh well, it's part of the job. That's what I say. We accept there might be increased risk, but we should never. We understand there might be increased risk, but we should never just accept it. Oh well, it's just part of the job.
And I think it's with risk man, I don't know, we don't get to follow up what's happened with that incident.
That's another reason.
The outcome. So it's a one-way communication.
Yes.
You give it, you've done your task, and that's it. How do I do something and you want to do I need to know what's happened.
I'm talking about a manager.
Absolutely, please do.
Because certainly from risk man, it's my obligation as a manager to actually follow up any sort of incident, talk to the staff, but also provide a feedback mechanism. So, you know, if there is that opportunity to provide learning to staff and outcomes or at least a way forward.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's...
I'm guessing, I've no idea. Some people do that really well, some people do it okay, and some people do it really poorly. It's just the nature of humans, isn't it? But I'm not saying that means it's okay, but it's not uncommon, unfortunately. You know, people are the best, leaders and managers do that really well, and you know, really other people are, you know, a mix of people, and that's not being critical of people. Generally, that's just human nature. Not everyone's operating at this level, are they, unfortunately? Doesn't excuse it, so I had a bit, doesn't close the loop. No one closes the loop, so we think, whether it's true or not, no one's reading it. The other bit is, I'm guessing, again, it was one of the questions at the start, wasn't it? We're more likely to report a physical assault than a verbal assault.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, you think, oh, I'm going to do all that paper, and you just think I'm a nice name, but it's just not worth it. But the flip risk of this, though, we can understand why. On occasion we don't. What's the downside of not doing it every time something happens?
The behaviour continues.
Yeah.
It's not called
out. Also, the more distance we are from the working realities, if it's not written down, if it's not there, it didn't happen, how do we know it's a big issue? So people potentially downplay, we don't think it's a big issue. So where's all the risk management? Where's all the incident reports that show this? Yeah, and that helps. It can be a vicious circle in that. You know, we just don't do it, something happens, and then, you know, etc. So it's important to think about, and it's a problem across caring professionals. You're not unusual, not that makes you feel any better, I'm sure, but thinking through, okay, how do we make it so we do fill it in, you know, the vast majority of times. The other thing I'd say is, some are obvious, but we probably all, you know, what I call an incident might be different to what you call an incident. Yeah, and what I call an incident on one day might be different to what I call an incident on another day. It's never going to eliminate that human error or human difference. When I'm at my best, I've had a great night's sleep, I'm on top of my game, I can cope with a lot more. I'm really run down, something's happening at home, it's not great, I'm more likely to perceive these as incidents. Yeah, that's the difference as humans. And that's just me, never mind across people. So how do we minimise that? Because as I say, the more distance people are from the working reality, the risk is to you, unless they understand how much you have to face in that. So, yeah, there's no easy solutions to this, but important to raise that. What do we do? How do we make sure it isn't vastly underreported, you know? In terms of, you know, containment, it's about how do we keep people safe, isn't it? What's the safest option around all of that? Yeah. Language we put in, so it's not uncommon in, certainly my understanding is, and it might be more than this, but the police and organisations like that often have training in incident, like writing incidents up. How do you write an incident? Anyone here have training in how to write an incident up? Yeah, one person. Yeah, and that's amazing. I think, we can potentially make this bigger than it needs to be. I think you watch an incident, something like that, off YouTube, whatever else. So let's all fill in something, you know, 10 minutes, let's all fill in an incident thing, and then compare. Alright, the risk is we start using subjective language, we start using emotional things, we start making assumptions and judgments around it. But if we don't practice that, it's not about not saying it, it's how we say things, isn't it? That can make a difference to how perceptions are. So in terms of record keeping, how soon after an incident are you expected to complete the relevant risk manual paperwork? So there's different things, and this has come up in all of them, yeah, and this is why it's important. Someone said, you know, by the end of your shift, someone said as soon as possible. Our advice is, and it's not, you know, law, you work it out. Someone yesterday said 48 hours. We'd say within 24 hours, personally. What's the risk of as soon as possible?
Emotional.
Well, my as soon as possible might be 3 weeks on Friday. Yeah, so there's no sort of definitive number. When we've got a number, we've got something to work to. The end of the shift, the risk is we haven't calmed down. Yeah, now we might do a verbal thing around this. This is what you might jot some notes. Yeah, because the longer we leave it, the less we remember. And that's the other rationale for it. But to do it and formalise it very quickly is that becomes a legal document that sometimes is used against people because of how it's written. Yeah, not protecting people or doing stuff they shouldn't do, but it's written in a way that when if it ends up in court, the lawyers use that and twist it in a way that ends up sounds like you've done horrendous things. You know, that's often where people have got themselves in trouble. Either they've got no paperwork about an incident or they've written it in a way that's highly emotive, judgmental, etc. So this is how do we learn from that so we protect people doing a difficult job, not protect people who are doing the wrong things. So we suggest, yeah, there might be a verbal response to key people. This has happened, I'll make sure I do it within 24 hours. This is, I'm not saying you have to do that, but that's our response. Too soon, I'm highly emotive, I've got to go home quickly, I'm quickly going to write it in. I'm still, adrenaline's still high for me because I've just been assaulted, verbally, physically, whatever else. More like to write in subjective, emotional ways. But in the cold light day, when everyone's calm, don't sound great. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that it has to be that. Structured recording forms, which written down will be structured, I'm presuming, guessing, as part of that, which is helpful in that way. One thing that most incident records don't include is what we call the 95%. What did you do to try and avoid that, making that worse? All right, because they often just talk about the incident. So person hit, you know, in a, not a good example because there was no de-escalation or opportunity there, but person hit, you know, person playing the recorder with a chair. Yeah, you know, so it's not a good example, but in working realities, most of the time, not all the time, because it happens really quickly. We've tried to de-escalate, we've tried to diffuse, we've tried to do something. I kept them informed as much as I could. Just give them a more balanced view of the incident, doesn't it, as opposed to just the worst bit of it. Okay? And again, ours, you know, the way we would do it is a checklist, not checklist, check boxes. So it prompts and reminds you, yes, I did try that. If not, it reminds you, oh yeah, I did try that, maybe that's useful next time. Alright, so you're trying to give a balanced view on it as opposed to just the worst part. Yeah, briefly exactly what happened. If you don't know, you say, yeah, I don't know, I don't remember. The risk is we think, oh, I sound incompetent if I say that. Yeah, rather than so we think, oh, I'll say something here. Yeah, so stick to what did you observe, just that. Yeah, don't put emotions, don't put judgments, don't put assumptions in there. And again, that's what we often need training to do that, because instinctively we're hardwired to do that. Yeah, and as you said, whether it is or isn't, it doesn't feel like it's monitored or evaluated for some people, and that makes a difference as to whether we do it. This last one, that maybe around particular individuals, that last one, if they've got a patient risk assessment management plan. Yeah, so people who attend regularly or coming in regularly, those are a long stay patients who we know at times display challenging behaviour or aggressive behaviour, foreseeable risk, then there's plans in place around that. What are the risks? What things generally don't work? What things generally do work? And we'll take you through a model a bit later that could be useful, you know, to look at what you currently do that sort of does this all in one sort of document around that one page. And you probably do this much better than generally we've done in education, wherever possible, includes the patient and the patient's family in that. In education, and obviously it's a different dynamic, but it doesn't excuse it. Often plans are written for about kids, but the kids never included in that conversation, unfortunately. And there's exceptions where it's not appropriate, but the vast majority, how do we include them? It's about them that can be really helpful. In terms of risk assessment, you know, again, this is in your policies and procedures. If you're sure, seek it out, find out about it. Internal, what am I thinking? How am I feeling? How do I respond best? What external, how do I think other people are, and any interactional or situational things before I decide what I'm going to do. Yeah, let me check this. Okay, how am I feeling? How am I sending out the signals I want to send out? What's happening here with that person? What might be there? And any interactional bits for people? And it could be histories that might come into play or situational things that might influence things getting worse or better, and then making a considered choice at that precise moment. So he says about being open and honest, isn't it? Making sure we report these things so people know about it. As organisation, well, as individually, making sure we do as the best we can around this, agreeing what we do, how we do it, how do we do it better if it's not there yet. As an organisation, it's always good to get external support around that. And in the instant reports, they say they're not get out of jail cards. It doesn't mean we can then put whatever we want after it. I did a dynamic risk assessment and felt this was the safest option, whatever it is. Yeah, you've got to justify it still, so it doesn't mean it's magic, it gets out of trouble, so you've still got to justify it, but it uses that language that I did a risk assessment in that moment. Yeah, and again, now what would I want somebody to do if that was my loved one?